Thank you so much. And I thank you for inviting me for this talk, to talk in front of such distinguished audience. Going ahead with the talk, really. Before I start talking about education per se, I'll run you through a few numbers just to give you an idea of, you know, the scale at which we are talking about this. So if we look at the structure of higher education in India, it's managed by a university grants commission. It's regulated by that. And we have several universities which come under UGC. A total of 903 universities are there as per the data of the All India Higher Education Survey, which was published last year. And then there are several affiliated degree colleges under these universities. We have as many as almost 40,000 of these colleges which are affiliated to these many universities. And these universities are of various kinds. You have central, state, and private universities. Of course, you must be familiar with that. However, these degree colleges are primarily focused on teaching as compared to, and the research only happens mostly at the university level, in the master's department, the PG departments, or the standalone national in these institutes of national importance, like TFR is one of such institutes. So there is a clear segregation of, where the job responsibility or the job description for an undergraduate, a teacher teaching at in an undergraduate degree college, does not entail engaging in research. While the researchers who are teaching or who are primarily whose job is to research, they are hardly involved in teaching. So we have these things divided into silos really in India. So these degree colleges, the way the structure developed, have evolved both functionally and infrastructurally to support only teaching, okay? Which is one very difficult parameter to go through right now. I'll talk about it as we go through this. So if we look at the enrollment of students, the numbers, you know, we have as many as 2.9 crore students enrolled in undergraduate colleges, that is, out of which 45 lakh students are only there in science disciplines. And this does not include the number which is there in engineering or medicine or other professional courses. This is only in undergraduate degree colleges in science disciplines. However, very low percentage of these students go on to enroll for a PhD, that is, research as a career, and most popular there is chemistry, followed by biology. Now, the number for biology discipline is cumulative of all the sub-disciplines, zoology, botany, microbiology, life science put together. I also checked up the number of colleges which are available per lakh population. So it comes out that UP has highest number of colleges, that this number is counted per lakh population, followed by Maharashtra. As many as, I think, 33 per lakh in Uttar Pradesh and 30 in Maharashtra. Majority of the undergraduate colleges are funded by the state. That is the infrastructure, the salary of the teachers, and there is a nominal tuition fee in the state-funded colleges. The education at that level is pretty much affordable, and in at least the government-funded colleges. Even though in the last 5 years, as I look through the data, there has been a substantial increase in the number of private colleges which has come up. And some of the government colleges have been asked to, you know, look for funding. So they are being converted to private colleges. Private as in partially aided, or that kind of a structure is being sought. Now, here this is... I did check up the numbers with US. Now, there, the total number of undergrad degree granting institutes is about 5,000. Okay. Now, I could not get exact numbers how many actually go on to enroll for PhD there. What I could get was that out of that 5,000, 1,500 colleges are community colleges, which offer a 2-year program. Rest all are affiliated to universities, which offer a 4-year degree, undergrad degree program. So students often take a 2-year community college course and then shift the credits to a 4-year university program. There is another big reason there. Their community colleges are completely funded by the state. Tuition fee is minimal, but the university degree departments are not fully funded. So the tuition fee is pretty high there. What data that I could get was there is almost a 50% dropout rate from the university college, that degree college, that 4-year. They are able to complete the 2-year, but very few of them actually go on to complete the 4 years of undergraduate degree. And there is a large population of the foreign students actually who are able to complete their degree courses. I do not have the exact percentage of the how many go on to do the PhD there. Why I brought this up, that the funding of these colleges in India, state is funding to a large extent. Okay, so everything is not really bad, I would say, as compared to, if you compare to developed nations, tuition fee is really high there. So once to these numbers, we start talking about education research. So in 2014, a new area of education research was actually identified, which was termed as discipline-based education research. This is got to do with, and it was defined as understanding and improving education at the undergraduate level. So this definition is by National Research Council, which is again an organization based in US. So idea was apply the education and learning theories to improve the education at the undergrad level, and their basic focus is to enhance the conceptual understanding of students and training the instructors to adopt to student-centric methods and move away from lecture-based methods. And primary focus is to link research to education, theory to education. There is a huge gap which was noticed between theory and research. So it's by various education researchers who collated the data, and they saw that incorporation of research leads to a better understanding at the undergraduate level. So there are efforts directed to link teaching with research. Then there is a specific effort to encourage the teachers at the tertiary level to develop scholarship of teaching learning. I'll explain this term. Scholarship of teaching learning is nothing but involving the teachers in education research, that is their practice to be informed by the learning of students. So learning of students serves as a measure for modulating their teaching practice. So that's just one facet of SOTL, the other being dissemination of that information, that is sharing of whatever strategies work in the form of publications or in the form of learning communities. So SOTL is primarily defined like that. So there have been several strategies which have been put forth for linking teaching research. It could be research-led, that is, it could be focused that the subject content, that is the theory part of it, can be taught with the help of research advances in the field. That instead of it being completely lecture-based, can be taken up as case studies which are based and rooted in research. Or history of science can be used to give a context to the learning and build case studies. Or problem solving, which can utilize the secondary data, that is data which is coming from these research articles. So that's considered as one of the tried and tested methods which leads to a better conceptual understanding among undergraduate students. Then the other is a research oriented, where the students learn to do research. They get familiar with research methods. And one of the models which has been proposed under DVR is a Cure Lab. I will be talking more about it. Now it is a collaborative research experience built for the undergraduate students. Then research based, which is considered as the best way of learning science, that is, it is an inquiry based method where students get involved in authentic research and learn by doing research. So again, that involves doing research projects which where original research is involved, and Cure Labs also have been adapted to where you could take up original research. Then the last type they say is research informed, where the target population is the instructor. As I just explained about SOTL, so this is a part of SOTL where the student learning is a measure to inform the teacher. So the learning of the students is assessed, and accordingly the practice of the teacher is affected. Yes, I have been involved in applying some of these. So I will be talking about some of the projects that I was involved in, and then we can maybe discuss it. Exactly. I'm happy to hear that. Are you aware of the issue? It's a I completely agree. That is why this question for all of you. Now, I would like to ask you all this question at this point. Is it necessary to include authentic research as a part of the curriculum at the undergrad level for improving the quality of tertiary education in India? Now, the idea of inclusion of research at the undergrad level has originated in the West. I'm throwing out this question to all of you, and I don't want the answer now. I do want you all to think about it. We can discuss it at the end of the talk, because I don't want you to be biased by what I'm going to present. I'll be presenting data, which I have worked with the teachers. So I would be very much interested in your opinion about it. Just think about it, and then maybe later we can discuss. The premise for doing the research needs to be actually defined. I completely agree, and that is one of the reasons I posed the question really at this point. So that is why I posed a question. Not that, you know, every time an idea originates in the West and we all tend to follow it, and we in a country with, that's why I also projected those numbers. Do we have a clear agenda of what we want from that undergraduate degree, and where are we heading really? So I think we are in for an interesting discussion later, and I would like you all to think about it and we'll discuss later. And please don't be biased by what I'm going to present as my data. We can have a discussion. No, not really. No. No. It's curriculum, if we embed it in the curriculum, which is very different from NIUS. That's apprentice based. That's certainly not it.
Why not? That can also be questioned. Yeah, but I think we already kind of do this kind of thing for us to ponder. We'll open up right after the presentation.
So, coming to the state of undergraduate biology education in India, that is some of my projects, how I've been involved. And before I joined HPCSE, I was a researcher and I was teaching master's students and there was a course that we were running it was a master's in plant biotechnology. So some of my experiences as a teacher provoked me to think really about, you know, what is happening at the undergrad level, and it's why my interest. Now, this master's course in plant biotechnology that we were offering in the university was open to students from all science disciplines. So, we invariably had a class which had a mixture of undergrads coming from physics, chemistry, and biology background. Also, we've had a student from maths background. So, as a teacher, in the first semester, we used to have a basic courses. I was involved in teaching biochemistry and plant physiology, and these two courses, I noticed that biology students had a high tendency for rote learn as compared to chemistry and physics students. Maybe given the discipline, but the tendency was just too strong. And the biologist would understand that is, even in the class, if I projected the Krebs cycle in a reverse direction, they were not able to comprehend it. So I've had those kind of problems. They had fixed ideas and extreme tendency for rote learning. That's particularly I noticed in the biology students. On the other hand, with physics students, I had a completely different experience. You give them numbers, they are very good at solving. But you define the problem with respect to a context, there they are lost. For example, I'll give you, give them numbers for solving an Ernst equation, but the minute you put it with respect to membrane potential, they'll have a problem. So those kind of things, it started coming to me as patterns, and that's where my interest was, that why such a thing is there, what is the problem that is, and it was repeatedly year after year I saw this in students. And in the university we had the curriculum was largely research based. We taught with research articles, case studies, and we had a huge component of research, and students had a difficulty in adapting to that kind of a routine. Critical understanding, testing questions were not answered well, and initially they had a lot of difficulty, at least for first two semesters. And that was across the board. That was not only biology students, but all students in general. Then, as a teacher who was teaching at the tertiary level, I noticed that, and I had another problem that since I was getting students from different stream, to address to that variability in the audience was a problem for me. And because of that, I started looking up effective methods to teach. And that's where I chanced upon, I would actually say chanced upon this entire area of education research. And I was so surprised that in India, I mean, you're asked to go and teach a master's class, a PG class, and there is no pre-exposure to teaching. It's just assumed that you will be a great teacher in the lab, and there is a whole field of education research which talks about learning and how effective learning happens. And there is absolutely no exposure to the teachers who are teaching at the tertiary level. And so this is one of the reasons which led me to, I got a chance to move to Mumbai, and that was one of the reasons I joined HPCSE, basically to improve my teaching at that point of time. That is, I wanted to be a better teacher. So one of the early projects that I, first project that I worked with Dr. Vijay Porkar, and this project, the bigger project, was aimed at inclusion of history of science as a pedagogical strategy at the undergrad level. And a part of that project required to look at the understanding of Mumbai University students. I'm only presenting a part of that study here. So we tested students' understanding of the basic topics, some of the basic topics in biology. We picked up three of them: growth and control of microorganisms, cell membrane structure, and evolution, with a particular focus on natural selection. And this questionnaire that we came up with consisted of application based questions, which was administered to 352 second year and third year students of Mumbai University. Largely second year, around 300 were second year students, but we had a small sample also from the third year students. And this these 352 students spanned five colleges of Mumbai University. We also collected data from teachers regarding practices and their opinion of the syllabus. And then additional data was collected from students on their career aspirations and their expectations from the course itself. And we carried out intensive, both qualitative and a quantitative analysis of the responses of the students. What we found, there was serious lacunae in understanding of students. I mean, these were really basic topics which are taught in the first year of the degree course, and students repeatedly come across these concepts. But gaps such as that students were not able to, they had a problem differentiating between sterilization and disinfection, something as basic a concept which is essential for biology students, and several others which we came across. So extremely dismal performance of the students was noticed on this questionnaire. What we also noticed, that there was a clear disconnect between theory and practice. That is, they were doing a lot of practicals, they were learning a lot in theory, but when it comes to applying the same thing on a question, they were just not able to. When we probed the teachers about the practical sessions, we came to know that it's just being conducted as validation routines. Nothing new was being done there. It is no exposure really was there to scientific method. So if it's students in a class of, let's say, 50 students, it's like running 50 positive controls where we already know the results and we know what we are starting with. So that kind of a routine is followed generally in an undergrad college. At least this is what we found in Mumbai University colleges. And another problem area that we identified was quantitative skills. Biologists doing basic maths, I mean, it could be so poor, we had not expected. Something as simple, the question was very simple, where we asked about counting of cells, that is, and we had really bad responses here, really poor responses. Then we looked at some of the university assessments. We looked up the question papers, and we rated the questions on Bloom's taxonomy scale. And we found that most of the questions were knowledge-based, that is, or did not require critical thinking. So it was completely fostering rote learning, and it could be, so the entire process of that, you know, undergraduate degree education is leading to a rote learning, which is only useful for passing the university exams. And teachers' opinion about skill building in the course didn't really match with the expectations of the students. Teachers did tell us that they are not ready for research after doing this degree course. Those students had the expectations that after doing a degree course in microbiology or biotechnology, they'll be ready for a career in research. To our knowledge, this was the first research study to assess the state of undergraduate biology education empirically in the country. And we published a part of it where we focused only on the growth and control of microbes, and other studies are still under review. So after having this done with the this poor performance that we saw of students, that set us to thinking that what could be done to improve the learning of college students. So we assessed the situation. We looked at what we had, strengths and limitations of the system. In strengths, motivation of the teachers. And this is something that came across every time we had an interaction with the teachers. I'll also be presenting, we collected evidence regarding that. And then the common syllabus across colleges. It may initially seem as a deterrent that, you know, everybody is following a common syllabus, but for initiating a change or a reform, it will be easier to transpire down across the colleges. So we felt that would be, could be used as one of the strengths. And we had a whole lot of limitations. We had a overloaded syllabus, which was also poorly designed. Most of the teaching is lecture based. There is absolutely no element of research. Large enrollment classes. So 40 to 50 students are there in each class. So students, so teachers have this limitation that even if they want to move away from lecture based methods, how do they do it? And teachers have no time, and it's a big limitation. They are overloaded with the teaching, with other administrative work. So how do they give time to improve the learning? And then lack of infrastructure and resources. As I said, that these colleges have not evolved to support research at all. Then teachers are not also prepared to adapt to these contemporary learning methods. They need a lot of training, and the assessment routines of the university are added deterrent there. And so we had a lot of negatives here, and we had very few degrees of freedom really to play with. We could not change the syllabus, we couldn't do anything about the teacher's time, we can't do much about the infrastructure and the resources. So what can we do? So when you can't change, thought we'll work our way around, we'll innovate. So we first looked at the laboratory component, because research is being projected as one essential component for a science student. So we thought that if we could improve something in the lab component, probably that can make a difference. So we looked at this CURE model, which is posed under DBR, and these CURE models are new modes being proposed which can be adapted to a large enrollment classes. The five facets of this CURE model are that the research experience can be designed, which can be course embedded in the, as an undergraduate curriculum could be defined around these CURE labs. And these CURE labs should take, it should be collaborative in nature. They should give enough know-how of the scientific process. Iteration of the experiment, which is a necessary part of the scientific process as well, should be involved. Then the problems which are picked up should have a broad relevance. And there should be an element of discovery which should be attached to these labs. So here also we had issues because again, in the when we talk of large enrollment classes, the large numbers, we have comparatively much larger numbers as compared to West. We have 50 to 60 students in a class. So it's not very easy to define here. And then the difference being that there they reworked the curriculum around these CURE labs. But we had no degree of freedom to do anything with the curriculum. We had a fixed curriculum with us, and we had to do whatever we can in that fixed curriculum. So where to begin? We started looking at the curriculum. We took a closer look, and what we found was it's a huge list of practicals. Almost 70 to 80 practicals in that entire 3-year program. something as basic as streaking of bacteria to fermentation processes, something like they're doing anything and everything which is required, actually, from gene cloning and really high end experiments are listed in the syllabus. What we figured out was that all these experiments are nothing but essentially steps in solving a research problem. Right now, what is being done is that they do standalone experiments. So if we can work out a way to link all these experiments up under a research problem, can we build a research experience for the students? So we looked at the curriculum and then we worked with some of the experienced teachers. They acted as resource persons for us, and we planned for a brainstorming session with the college teachers, and we planned for this workshop, which was held in September 2017, which was attended by 45 teachers from 20 colleges across Mumbai. And we focused on two disciplines, microbiology and biotechnology. They are the two applied courses, and they share a lot in common in their practicals. And the range, the participants who attended, we had newly joined teachers who had less than 6 months of experience, and we also had teachers who had who almost had 40 years of experience. So we collected some data before the workshop just to see what can we do. So we found that, as I said, the teachers were highly motivated to look at how student learning can be improved, and they wanted to really look at how they can look at improving their research experiences. Then some of the data that we got for the routine laboratory sessions, they told us that they do not necessarily follow the order of the practicals which is listed in the syllabus, and they tend to club some of the related experiments. So that gave us one area where we could work. And unfortunately, the students are not involved in planning of the practicals. As I said, that these, and one blatant thing that came out was that the students are given protocols, and they are given everything to do an experiment in the lab. There is no hypothesis building, no research method followed. So students exactly know what they're given and what kind of a result they should expect. So this is something that we wanted to look at again, that how we can break this cycle. And other inputs that we got was that students spend a lot of time in the laboratory, almost 2 to 3 hours every, at least thrice a week for all science students that we got, they are spending in lab. That comes to cumulative a lot of time in lab during the semester. So we looked at time as a cumulative time across the semester and across the semesters. Then the protocols, as I said, are provided, and then students are not involved in planning. Another thing, another feedback that we got was most teachers are concerned with only the part they are teaching. So it may so happen that one course is divided among two teachers or three teachers. They are not coordinating with each other. So that also leads to a disconnect among students. Of course, lack of infrastructure to conduct experiments was reported by a lot of teachers, and there are a lot many experiments listed in the syllabus. Some of the advanced experiments they don't even do. They do it as demos, or a video is shown to the students. So this came across as something that we wanted to address. So what we did, okay? So we wanted it to be a hands-on activity, and we wanted teachers to figure out research problems under which we could club these experiments. So we made small cards with aims of experiments written on them as they are mentioned in the syllabus, and then we color coded the cards. Then teacher worked in groups, and each group was supported by a resource person. And then what they were asked to do was, that is, figure out a research problem under which you can club as many experiments. Okay? And they were allowed to do it, that is, horizontally and work it vertically, that is, across within a semester and across semesters. That can you carry forward a result of one experiment to next semester as well, which could be carried on as a research activity, a prolonged research activity. So, that is why we did color coding for ease of separation there. And this is how this was conducted. And then we had discussion on viewing negative results as opportunities for learning for students. Now, something very interesting came up during the this workshop, that these practical sessions are designed such that a student is expecting a positive result. But does that really happen in a research lab? How many times we end up with negative results, and that's the part of learning? And students are not encouraged to get a negative result. There are separate marks for a positive result in the exam. So that's what teachers told us. That is, the examiner will look at the positive result. So we had a huge discussion on that. In fact, some of my friends earlier when I've also noticed this with research students, that if students undergo this kind of a training, they come to a research lab with a bent of mind that, you know, the first day my experiment will work and I am expecting a positive result. But that invariably does not happen in a research lab, and it's like students tend to get frustrated then in the labs. That's we also did a session on statistics. Most of the biology teachers have not been using statistics as a tool to quantify variation in lab. So they are sticking to a very they give an endpoint, or they want certain kind of a result, but they do not make use of statistics. So we had a small session there. And then we also had a session on using virtual labs and bioinformatic tools. Now, things like we used, I'm forgetting that. It's some of the virtual labs, like for PCR. Many of the undergrad colleges do not have a PCR machine. So we showed them some of the virtual labs which can be actually used instead of demos or instead of just showing a video. Restriction endonucleases. They are really expensive, and most of the colleges cannot afford those. So those are the typical experiments where demos are done. So bioinformatic tools like NEPCutter and others were demonstrated that they can actually work out problems using these bioinformatic tools. And for these two specially, that is, we found that bioinformatic tools, many of the teachers were totally untrained on. They have not come from a time where these were very commonly used. Oh yes, that's there in the syllabus. That's very much there in the syllabus, and they really don't know what to do about it. I'll talk about that. So this is the kind of things that they did in the class. I'll give one example. It's a very small example. I just picked up one. That is, how to convert a simple assay kind of a thing into a research problem, and this was one of the examples. This is built by the teachers. That is, so this is a single experiment, but we had examples where across the semesters they were able to club and come up with many more research problems. So in this, if you notice, the students can be divided into groups, so that group works as a collaborative, they work on one part or one aspect of the research, and later they come together to collate the data. So every set becomes an iteration actually. That's what we looked at. We can vary conditions, and then the data can be collated later. So instead of running those 50 positive controls, if we are able to bring in variation within that set, it makes much more sense. Grades to a greater learning. You are developing a hypothesis, you are doing the entire scientific process there, and that collation of data is leading to a much more meaningful learning. So we came up with, we did a lot many research problems were developed like this. And what we proposed is that is before every experiment, literature survey should be done by students, and design of the experiment, the students should be involved in planning and design of the experiments. So we managed to utilize weaknesses actually as opportunities. All the experiments that they looked at could be done within the given infrastructure and resources they had. And large number of students was actually used as an advantage, where we used it as where iterations could be done with the same experiment. Statistics was applied, and then we were able to prepare a common pool of resources which was shared among all these teachers across 20 colleges. We also created a community of teacher learners as a social media group. Now this was, I think somebody in the audience was mentioning, that they do not have access also to research articles. That's one of the limitations of the teachers. They do not have time to read research articles. So we started this social media group, and this has become a platform to share interesting science news and articles, and which can be read by them even while they are commuting. So that takes care of the time part also, that they do not have time to read. And we also noticed that since they are not reading research, they had problems in designing research. So one of the motives of developing this kind of a group was that to get them to read more. What is happening? What is the current research? So this is actually a platform where we do share a lot of interesting resources. So the feedback of this workshop was really great. They really liked it, and they almost everybody said that they are going to implement it. None of them said disagreed with this statement. But exactly. Yeah, I mean, you should have seen the energy in the workshop. We designed as many as 40 problems, and it was all in the syllabus. We thought that, you know, it should be taken up, and we've taken care of all these problems there. Only a couple of teachers actually reported that they implemented. I mean, though I have not carried out a systematic follow-up, but I completely agree, and we actually heard a lot of these things from teachers. They told us the same thing, that is, we don't have 50 students, if they are engaged in these kind of activities, obviously it will generate questions, okay? And as for the training of teachers, or there, are they really qualified to handle these kind of problems, I also have my doubts there. And actually, I would say that's why I asked you a question earlier, and I asked you not to be biased by what I'm going to present now. And we'll discuss this. This is a much larger discussion than just this data. Okay. So, nevertheless, we undeterred by this entire thing. We still went on to do another workshop. This was a workshop on bioinformatics now, and this was a need which was expressed by the teachers. Okay. During the earlier workshop, many of them, now bioinformatics now has been added in the undergrad biotechnology syllabus. In fact, in the past 6-7 years that I have been following this biotechnology undergrad syllabus, since 2011 there have been 5 to 6 revisions of the same syllabus, where every time something has been added without realizing that it is adding on to the syllabus. Every time a new research comes in and something is added up. So now this bioinformatics now is an essential course, a part of both biotechnology and microbiology programs, where it has both a theory component and a practical component, and most of the teachers are untrained. They just are not aware of how to handle it. I mean, we had reports of teachers where they were talking about databases and students were asked to write notes that, you know, what is a database. So they have to write a page full of notes, and then BLAST is seeing the red line. So they give a sequence, they BLAST, and they, if you get a red line, so you've successfully done BLAST. So that's how they've been doing. So we, so this was expressed by the teachers, and then we planned another workshop. And this time, this was a better planned workshop with, we got a resource person, Dr. Ashwin helped us out. And then Noreen, she is in St. Xavier's College and she teaches bioinformatics. So I worked with both of them to come up with a module which was basically a problem-based approach for learning bioinformatics. Now here we treated teachers as learners. Teachers were not exposed to this field at all. Even to deliver to their students, they had to learn first. So this entire module was created as a learning module based on problems, and it was completely rooted in the curriculum. We did not go out the curriculum which was defined for the undergraduate students. It is like whatever terms were mentioned there, we picked up there and we defined problems for that. And we used popular science news and books to come up with these problems to make it more appealing to the students also later. It was attended by 20 teachers, and we had a great response to this workshop. 7 of the teachers actually got back to us while designing the problems for their course, which was offered last semester. And this was in, because it was, it had people ranging from microbiology, biotechnology, pharmacy and other things. So some of them have already implemented, others have been talking, because there again, there is a group that we discuss all this in. We use science news to build problems. And this group is much more active, where whenever I post news which is relevant, they tend to discuss. So here we have been able to get better success rate. So one of the examples I'll give you for the kind of problems that we built. This one was picked up from the novel Jurassic Park, in which the movie is based. We actually also played the clip where he goes on to show that dino DNA and how it matches and other things. So we actually asked them to check this out, whether this is a dino DNA or not. This is a published sequence in the book, and we picked it up from there. So this was used as one of the problems for teaching BLAST. And then there were others which were picked up from the problem of the Iceman, that the mummies which were discovered in Europe, and then how they worked it out from what was the origin of those two, or the mummies which were found. So we came up with almost 15 to 20 problems like this, and we also had sessions on problem building for teachers. Yeah. And we had a lovely feedback. I'm sorry, I think the scale is missing. The blue is strongly agree, so, and yellow is disagree. So many of them got back to us saying that this was one of the workshops which was unlike others, which actually focused on learning of teachers, as we would like to do it with our students, so we could replicate the same model with our students directly. And they got a lot of novel ideas to teach bioinformatics, yeah, as expressed by teachers. So some of the other projects that I've been involved in, I work with PG Department of Biotechnology in St. Xavier's College. And they were working on this project, production of polyhydroxybutyrate. It's a biochemistry course. This biochemistry course, they have this project, and production of this PHB from microbial source was done, was being done as a project earlier. So when I looked at the syllabus, then we worked out the way that it can be used to teach intermediary metabolism to students. So by using several substrates, different substrates across the board, we were able to develop this methodology that now this entire course has been reworked as a lab-based course. It's a research-led course, and intermediary metabolism is only taught after they first go through it in the lab. So this was done by 30 students, and we'll be soon publishing this out. And also we implemented a part of the case study. Now this case study I had written when I was at HBCSC. This case study also looks at intermediary metabolism. And I wrote this case study using 20 research articles spanning the entire 20th century and to the post-genomic studies. So that also a part has been implemented now there in Xavier's, and the coming semester rest of it would be implemented. Then all these interactions, I also noticed that the autonomous colleges had a greater flexibility, and the teachers were actually implementing out new strategies, and some of them are really brilliant. They are seasoned teachers who have tried and tested these strategies, but we have and we do not know about it. There is no public domain where they can communicate what they are doing, and they are not trained for writing how education research or what their classroom interventions, what they are doing and what is these tried and tested methods, if they can be shared with a larger community. So they are not used to writing it. So I've been working with some of the teachers to write it out and communicate. But unfortunately, we do not have a national level publication platform. So we have to really compete with international level, and it's very difficult. We are just beginning up, and they already have those many established platforms for teachers. We do not have a single platform where we can communicate these kind of things. So these have been some of projects that I've been involved in. So some of the learnings and observations that I can summarize from all my projects, it's just only a part of it which I've presented really. But the tertiary level teachers do require a comprehensive training before they can adapt to these contemporary learning methods. And the tertiary teacher trainers need to be sensitive to these needs. They need to actually talk with these teachers. The training process needs to be more intimate. And I noticed this specifically in the case of the bioinformatics workshop, the need was expressed by the teachers, and they were really willing to learn and absorb. And they did implement. That's one part which was really good there. And teachers are highly motivated to learn. This has come time and again, and during the bioinformatics workshop, we had teachers who told us that do not arrange fancy workshops for us. Just tell us, we'll get dabba from home and we'll sit here and learn. You arrange a summer program for us, but we want to learn. And these community, there's some teachers who want to, it's like they can share with each other. Who are teaching the same topics can collectively come with a strategy to teach. As mentioned earlier, that most teachers are not qualified enough to supervise research. At least quality research, I would say, it's difficult for them to supervise. And the current infrastructure of undergrad colleges does not support quality research. I would say that. That's my assessment of the whole thing. So coming back to the question. Yeah. true. It does. We do. We do need that. But then we can't say that first we'll reform the school education and then we'll go to the higher education. It has to be done in tandem. I won't agree to that because, you know, here the level of the subject content level is really high as compared to school teachers. And actually, even for the teacher trainers here, the teacher trainers need to have that expertise in the discipline plus have had some training in education to be able to handle those undergrad teachers. We haven't made board wise comparison, but we had it was spanning all. As for the board, the test that we conducted was with the second years. So, first year they all had a similar syllabus which they went through. We didn't really look at those references, but how is it executed as a chapter? Exactly. That's what we also found, that assessment. As for this particular thing,
I think we should allow the speaker to say a few words and then maybe we will try to also take that. So, are you actually through?
This is not the last slide, discussion here and it's a valid discussion that we are going into. Yeah, but what she's saying is that even in the UG colleges, it's coming from state board.
So, you still have something to show, I would like to finish and then maybe some more discussion we can also have about this.
Okay. So I, before I go ahead, I would like to answer something there. I think you talked about the DNA structure, like something. From my experience, that when I was looking at the curriculum of the undergrad colleges, as biotechnology specifically, they talk about replication in the first semester and they teach DNA structure in the second semester. I really don't know how they managed to do that. I just could not understand. I asked the same question. I'm so happy you raised it. I'm on the board of studies of Xavier's College now, and I asked that as the first question. Do you understand the difference between syllabus and curriculum? And they all looked at me. And it's synonymous, yes. I asked the same question, I did. So heartening to hear that. It's at least okay. So I feel that if we really have to improve education at the tertiary level, there has to be a concerted effort between natural science researchers, college teachers, and the DBR researchers to come up with, you know, to inculcate that research experience for undergrad students. We really need these natural science researchers who've been only involved in research, and I feel that this can be a model to look at which can work in a country like India, where we have been existing in these silos where researchers don't really mingle or do not advise on teaching. So they could work with teachers to come up with KeolLabs and writing their own research as teaching cases. Now, one problem that also was there, that there is no role model to follow. The research that happens in Indian labs is not really communicated out as science news, or it's not out there in the public domain. I wouldn't say public domain, that is, research articles have been termed as difficult to understand by undergrad students. So there is no way where there can be a they are not in the form which can be easily understood by the undergrad students. So, and we need to create more postdocs in DBR. Many of the students who are now engaged in their research in natural sciences should think of taking up education research as one of the career options. We need lot many people to do this kind of a job. And need to share resources with teachers. Something as basic as running one or two PCRs, or they do not have storage facilities for their strains. They do not have minus 80s, they do not have minus 20s. So how do they carry forward their work? They isolate so many consortia and they do not know what to do with it in the next semester. So something like this, and if some local learning communities could be built, that for example, we have TFR in South Bombay and you have so many colleges, and if some kind of that community can be built between the researchers and the teachers, I think that will be a workable model. So that's all I have, and I thank you all for being a beautiful audience.
More interesting. So, yeah, please.
I have already asked you a lot of this question.
So NIOS program follows what is called as apprenticeship model, which is based on where students who are mostly self-driven to get involved in a research project tend to apply, and it's a competitive process where not all students get an opportunity to get a research experience. While the question actually asked where if it can be embedded in the curriculum such that all the students are exposed to that research experience. So that's one of the primary differences that I am looking at. And CureLabs is one of the, as it has been proposed in the DBER model, it can actually cater to building those research experiences where all undergrad students in a class can have a research experience. So that's just a different model. You're still doing research, but at which is embedded in the course, the regular curriculum. Yeah, as a pedagogical tool. Exactly. That's why one of the reasons I asked that is it necessary to include authentic research? I used a word authentic there. That is it necessary that everybody is involved in original research? Okay, we look at, or is it more important to inculcate that scientific process, that analytical mind to be able to question? And which is a facet which will help them in every area of life to be informed citizens. I mean, the problem of pseudoscience that we are having every day, that will be taken care of. That is, if we have a population or manpower which is being, which is aware and which is ready to question and analyze a situation, I think that will be that's a better bet to me. Authentic research, of course, is considered as the best way of learning, but can we really do it at this scale? Agree there, and actually when I said that writing case studies, that is writing research case studies for teaching, that is converting research into teaching case studies using actual data in the class for that kind of learning. And that's why we need a lot many natural science researchers to come up and write those case studies. You need people to do that kind of a resource material is required. That can't be done by teachers alone, at least they need help in doing that. So that's why I said that there requires to be a partnership between all three of these professionals.
The last one.
I was not thinking that including research in undergraduate was meant to prepare them to be researchers further, but more as a pedagogic tool.